These are not three separate devices. This is one device, and we are calling it iPhone. Steve Jobs is standing on the stage at the Macworld Expo in San Francisco. It is 9:41 in the morning, January 9th, 2007. He is wearing his black turtleneck and his Levi's 501 jeans. The auditorium is full, every seat taken, the aisle standing, the room dim except for the stage light on him. For the past 20 minutes, he has been doing one of the most carefully choreographed bits of theater of his entire career. He told the audience he had three new products to announce. A widescreen iPod with touch controls, a revolutionary mobile phone, and a breakthrough internet communications device. He repeated the list slowly. He let the audience think they were about to see three things. And then he pulled the trick. Today, he says, Apple is going to reinvent the phone. He calls his competitors out by name. The Motorola Q, the BlackBerry, the Palm Trio, the Nokia E62. He shows their pictures on the giant screen behind him, side by side, and he points at the bottom of each one at the small plastic keyboards built into their faces. The trouble with these, he says, is that the keyboard is there whether you need it or not. You cannot make it go away when you do not need it. He says the word smart in a way that makes it sound a little contemptuous, and then he shows them what he means. A device the size of a card deck, all glass on the front, with no keyboard at all, just a black screen that lights up to reveal whatever software is currently running on it. He drags his finger across the screen, and the screen moves with his finger. He pinches with two fingers, and a photo zooms out. He taps a name in a list, and a phone call begins. There is no manual. There are no instructions. The room is, for a long moment, very quiet. 620 miles away, in Waterloo, Ontario, the engineer who built the most successful smartphone of the previous decade is running on a treadmill. His name is Mike Lazaridis. He is watching the keynote on television. He stops the treadmill. He stands there, holding the rails, and he does not move for a long time. This is Rust, gently. A patient introduction to how computers actually work and to one particular language for talking to them. I am your host. This is episode 15. The pocket inversion. Today I want to tell you a story about the moment the computer left the desk and moved into your pocket. By the end of this episode, you will understand how an industry that was in 2006 dominated by a handful of large companies making devices most of you have never owned became, by the end of that decade, one of the largest and most universal markets in human history, with more than 7 billion active devices in circulation. More devices than there are adults on the planet. The shift happened fast, and the companies who were on top before it began are, almost without exception, no longer with us. You will understand why. Let me back up and tell you about the company that was on top. The company was called Research in Motion, and it was headquartered in Waterloo, Ontario, an hour west of Toronto. It had been founded by Mike Lazaridis and his childhood friend Doug Fredgen, who had been doing wireless data work together since 1984. On January 19, 1999, Research in Motion shipped a product called the BlackBerry 850. It was not a phone. It was a two-way pager with a small physical keyboard, where the keys looked, if you squinted at them, like the small bumps on a BlackBerry, which is where the name came from. Over the next 8 years, the BlackBerry became the indispensable device of every executive, every lawyer, every banker, every politician in the developed world. By 2009, Research in Motion had 56% of the United States smartphone market. The BlackBerry Curve was the best-selling smartphone in America. Research in Motion was ranked number one on the Fortune list of fastest-growing companies. They had more than 80 million subscribers worldwide. The BlackBerry was very good at the things it was very good at. It sent email reliably over weak networks. Its battery lasted days. Its keyboard was a piece of mechanical art. Lazaridis had personally obsessed over the geometry of every key, the spring weight, the angle of the bevel, the texture of the surface. You could compose a long email with your thumbs on a BlackBerry faster than most people could compose one on a laptop. Generations of executives in airports, in conference rooms, in taxis, in bed, did their actual work on these devices. The BlackBerry was, by any fair measure, one of the most successful pieces of consumer technology ever shipped. The morning of the iPhone keynote, the chief operating officer of Research in Motion, a man named Larry Conley, was asked by the board what he thought. He told them the iPhone had rapid battery drain and a lousy keyboard. The co-chief executive, Jim Balsillie, told Lazaridis it was okay. "We will be fine," he said. They had reason to believe it. In the first quarter after the iPhone launch, Research in Motion subscriber numbers continued to grow. They added 2 million subscribers in 3 months. The numbers, by every measure their executives had ever used to track success, were getting better. It is a particular kind of trap. The dashboard is green. The metrics are up and to the right. The press is still mostly positive. And meanwhile, the ground underneath the company is being rebuilt by somebody else in a different city around a fundamentally different idea, and the company will not realize what has happened until several years later, when the rebuilding is complete and the old ground is gone. They were not fine. Here is what the iPhone actually was beneath the showmanship. The iPhone was a small Unix-based computer with a touchscreen and a cellular radio. That is the whole thing. It was not, strictly speaking, a better phone. In its first year, it was, in many ways, worse than the BlackBerry. The keyboard was slower. The email was worse. The battery was shorter. It dropped calls. It cost $500 when most phones cost $100. But it was a real computer. The kind of computer you can install software on. The kind of computer where the software defines what the device does, rather than the hardware. And the moment you have that, the device becomes whatever the most creative people in the world decide to make of it. That moment took 18 months. On July 10, 2008, Apple opened a service called the App Store. There were 500 apps available on launch day, 125 of them free. 10 million downloads over the first weekend. By September, 3,000 apps, 100 million downloads. By the next summer, a billion. People were buying calculator apps for 99 cents, weather apps for free, games for $2, productivity tools, art tools, banking tools, dating tools, ride-sharing tools that did not exist yet, but were about to. The economy of software shifted in 18 months from box CDs at Best Buy to a payment card on file in your pocket, with a 30% tax collected automatically by Apple on every transaction. 3 months later, on October 22, 2008, a phone called the HTC Dream shipped in the United States as the T-Mobile G1. It ran an operating system called Android, built by Google. The G1 looked, by any honest measure, worse than the iPhone. It had a slide-out keyboard. It had a trackball. It did not have a headphone jack. It sold 1 million units in 6 months, which was not very many. But Android was open. Google gave it away free to any phone manufacturer who wanted to use it, and within a few years, every phone manufacturer on the planet was using it. Samsung, HTC Sony, LG Huawei, Xiaomi. The two operating systems, iPhone's iOS and Google's Android, between them, took the entire phone market. There's a number I want to give you, because it captures the size of what happened. In 2011, for the first time, smartphones outsold personal computers over a full year. 488 million smartphones shipped that year. 414 million personal computers, and that personal computer number includes tablets. By the fourth quarter of 2011, in 3 months, the world bought 158 million smartphones, compared to 120 million personal computers. Apple alone shipped 93 million iPhones that year, 30 times what they had shipped in 2007. Research in Motion went the other way. On January 22, 2012, Mike Lazaridis and Jim Balsillie both resigned. The company never recovered. The BlackBerry, the device generations of executives had been incapable of putting down, was effectively dead within 5 years of the iPhone announcement. The keyboard, the thing Lazaridis had built his career around, the thing that had felt like the most important physical part of any computing device on Earth, turned out to be the thing that locked his company into a shape it could not escape. What I want you to notice in this whole story is the shape of what got inverted. For the entire previous history of computing, the computer was a thing you sat down at. You walked to a desk, you opened a laptop, you booted a machine. The act of using the computer was a separate act from everything else in your life. The phone fixed that. The phone, beginning around 2007 and concluding by about 2012, became the computer. Not a smaller computer, not a worse computer. The actual primary computer in most people's lives. And because the phone is with you at all times, in your hand, in your pocket, on your nightstand, the relationship between a person and the act of using a computer changed completely. The computer is no longer a thing you visit, it is a thing you carry. That inversion is the structural reason the largest companies in the world today are companies that own the phone, or companies that built software for the phone, or companies that use the phone to rewrite an existing business. Uber rewrote the taxi business with the phone. Airbnb rewrote the hotel business with the phone. DoorDash rewrote restaurant delivery with the phone. Tinder rewrote dating with the phone. Robinhood rewrote retail brokerage with the phone. Every one of these companies built their business by assuming, correctly, that the customer would always be holding a small computer. As of 2025, there are about 7 billion active smartphones in the world. Between 2009 and now, somewhere around 20.4 billion have been sold cumulatively. In 2025 alone, 1.64 billion. The smartphone is the largest single category of consumer technology ever shipped by a very wide margin. It outnumbers televisions. It outnumbers cars. It outnumbers refrigerators. There are more active smartphones in the world than there are adults, because most people in wealthy countries own more than one, and most people in developing countries replace theirs every few years. If you set out to design the most successful manufactured object in human history, you would, by sheer numbers alone, end up designing something very close to the smartphone. Three things to carry away from today. The first is that the iPhone was not, on its launch day, a better phone than the BlackBerry. It was something different. It was a small computer pretending to be a phone. And the moment software started being written for it, the pretending stopped, and it became a small computer that also happened to make calls. The second is that Research in Motion did not lose because they were arrogant. They lost because they had built an enormously successful business around a particular shape of device, and that shape became the wrong shape almost overnight, and they could not turn fast enough to change shapes. The graveyard of computing is full of companies that built the right thing for the previous era. The third is that the computer is not where it used to be. It is in your pocket. It is in 7 billion pockets. Almost everything you will ever build or sell or learn or read will happen on a computer somebody is holding while they are walking. That is the world you are designing for now. Next time on Rust, gently, we will follow the computer one step further. Not into your pocket, but out of your sight entirely. We will sit in Jeff Bezos's house in 2003 around a long table where a group of senior Amazon engineers are trying to articulate something that nobody has quite said out loud yet. We will watch the data center become a utility, and we will name the day in 2006 that the cloud quietly began. Until then, take good care of yourself. I will see you in the next one.